Good morning. Would you join me on the prayer of illumination? Holy God, nourish our souls with the feast of your word. Amen. Our reading today is from the Old Testament prophet Isaiah, chapter 25, verses 6 to 9. It's possibly known as a song of praise. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all people a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wines, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wines strained clear. And he will destroy on this mountain the shroud that is cast over all peoples, the sheet that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death forever. Then the Lord God will wipe away the tears from the faces of the disgrace of his people. He will take away from all of the earth, for the Lord has spoken. It will be said that on that day, lo, this is our glory, God. We have waited for him so that he might save us. This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Jim. And thank you, Mary and Susan, as well. That was fantastic, bringing us into worship. We are still in our series looking at the signs and wonders of Jesus. And last week, Joshua talked about the healing of the man who was born blind. We were reminded that Jesus is present with us. Whatever we're experiencing, whatever cards we've been dealt, Jesus is there. And this week, we're looking at one of the most incredible miracles of Jesus. It's a long and complicated story, but it starts out with Jesus getting news that his good friend Lazarus has died, or is ill. And Jesus hears this news that his friend Lazarus is sick, and he procures the fastest horse possible and races down to help his friend. Well, actually, he sits around for 2 days doing nothing. And then slowly walks, not even on a donkey, walks to the home of his good friend Lazarus. And I always joke that God is a procrastinator. This text is my proof. Although in Jesus' defense, our text says that by the time Jesus arrives, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And Jesus only delayed two. So by the time those messengers finally found Jesus, he knew that Lazarus was already dead. And the timing, though, 4 days, was important. Because in those times, people would occasionally be buried when they were just like in a coma. And then they would wake up later. That's a bad day, in case you're wondering. And one ancient rabbi chronicled this. He wrote down that once a man who had been buried was examined and found to be alive, he lived 25 years more and then died. Or another such person lived and had 5 children before he died. These things happened sometimes. And so it was the Jewish custom to visit the burial site for 3 days in case someone woke up. And after 3 days, though, or whenever decomposition started, as evidenced by the smell, a person was well and truly dead. So when Jesus arrives on the scene, 4 days after Lazarus died, there's no doubt remaining. Lazarus is dead. End of story. Or is it? John chapter 11. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. and everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up and quickly go out. They followed her because they thought she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." And Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench, because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always heard me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, his face wrapped in a cloth, and Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. My family was on one of our standard vacations to the Gulf of Mexico when we got a call. One of our family friends had just lost their child. Sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, is pretty much the worst nightmare of every first-time parent. Its suddenness, its randomness causes you to constantly stare into the video monitor wondering, is my baby still breathing? I actually know a friend who was rescued by one of those random parent check-ins, those irrational, one last time, I'll double check. Her mom came in, found out she wasn't breathing, and was able to resuscitate her just by the miracle timing of that one last check-in. But our family friends weren't so lucky. Since we only had our beach clothes with us, we swung by a Kmart and got back to Austin just in time. And one of the most difficult funerals I have ever attended, there were many different responses. Some wept openly. Some only had wet eyes. Some seemed stoic and dead to emotion. Others seemed to be busying themselves with food preparation or making sure the flowers look just so. In our text today, Lazarus's friends and family have similarly divergent approaches to their grief. Some weep and wail with ferocity. Some have but a tear running down their cheek. Martha, ever the busy woman, is trying to fill her hands with something to do. And Mary, always the quieter one, is wiped out, weeping, unable to stand. But I like this variance, because I think it shows us that there isn't just one way to mourn. People mourn in their own way. I'm more of the quiet mourner, likely to kind of keep my feet moving. You might hear a sad sigh every once in a while. That's how I mourn. How do you mourn? When have you had occasion to mourn? Lost a parent? Lost a spouse? Lost a child? Lost a job? Lost your innocence, lost yourself? When have you been wiped out? Emotionally, physically, spiritually? Now, out of these many ways to mourn, I think Mary is a very interesting case. Verse 28, her sister Martha says to her, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And then verse 29 says, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, in the original language, that's actually passive. She was raised up and went to him. I think that's an important difference. because it shows that she wasn't able to stand on her own. In the midst of her grief, she was raised up. Something else lifted her, not her own strength. She isn't able to swim, so she needs floaties. What floats her? What lifts her? The teacher is here and is calling for you. Mary is raised to new life after being mired in the depths of her hopelessness because Jesus called her. Lazarus is, of course, raised to new life after being well and truly dead because Jesus called him out of the tomb. Even Martha is called raised to new life. In her conversation with Jesus, she spouts off her religious training. But then Jesus called her to him, not just her intellectual knowledge. "I am the resurrection and the life," he tells her. All three are raised to new life because Jesus called them. Is Jesus calling you? Calling you to new life? Calling you to stand even in the midst of hopelessness as he did with Mary? Calling you to have a relationship with him, not just a series of things you know about him, as he did with Martha. Calling you to walk out of your bondage, to drop your chains, to come out of whatever tomb you're laying in, as he did with Lazarus. Where is Jesus giving you floaties? Because you can't swim on your own. Our family friend who lost his child was called to new life too. His faith during that time went from something nice to something life-saving for him. And as he slowly emerged from those depths of despair, lifted up by the floaties of faith in Jesus, he recognized that during that time, Jesus was the only one keeping him going. The teacher was there, calling for him. And so as he recognized how Jesus saved him, he felt called to pass that lifesaver on to others, and wrote a book, Surviving Grief by God's Grace, by Richard Battle. Jesus gave him the strength to stand. And then Jesus called him to help others find that strength as well. And that has always stuck with me. Because it won't do my kids any good if I buy them floaties and never put them on. If someone has fallen overboard, all the life preservers in the world, all the rescue boats in the world won't do any good unless someone tosses in the flotation device or pilots the boat to rescue them. Do you know anyone who could use a life preserver or a rescue boat or even some floaties? Is Jesus calling you to help? Rabbi Kushner, the author of the book When Bad Things Happen to Good People, writes about families who are mourning. And the Jewish tradition is to sit Shiva. It's a week-long time where friends and family surround the family of the deceased to talk, to bring meals, and generally try to bring comfort and peace. But as we saw in our text today, even when Mary got up and people thought she was going to visit the tomb, what did they do? They followed her. You can't be alone while people are sitting Shiva with you. And so Rabbi Kushner writes, "So often when I meet a family after a death before a funeral service, they will ask me, do we really need to sit Shiva? To have all these people crowding our living room, couldn't we just ask them to leave us alone?" My response is no. Letting people into your home, into your grief, is exactly what you need now. You need to share with them, to talk with them, to let them comfort you. You need to be reminded that you are still alive and that you are still a part of a world of life. So is Jesus calling you to remind someone else that they are still alive and still a part of this world of life? In a world where death seems to be the only constant, Jesus affirms that life is the true reality. Death doesn't win because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Death doesn't win because the teacher is here and is calling for you and for me. Death doesn't win because Jesus says, "Unbind them and let them go." Where is Jesus empowering you to stand, even though, like Mary, you might be wiped out? Where might Jesus be calling you to throw someone a life preserver, to pilot a rescue boat, to help someone put on some floaties, to sit Shiva for someone else who is wiped out? We are a community of life, and we worship and follow the God who says, "I am life." That's the kind of God I can worship, and that's the kind of community I want to be and want to belong to. How about you?